I do appreciate the opportunity to speak today and appreciate you coming and listening. I sometimes forget because I do rice and only rice, and the folks that I talk to in the South pretty much know what I'm talking about. But we do grow rice in a delayed flood system where we practically grow it like wheat for the first 4 to 6 weeks of its life before we establish the permanent flood. So with that in mind, we do see seedling growth being a challenge at times, especially in years where you have this combination of soil and climatic, and then also the potential for herbicide injury or herbicide drift. One thing that we've got quite accustomed to in the South is that everything else is Roundup ready except rice. So we're quite used to seeing ugly rice because of a drift and trying to make miracles from thin stands. With all of that being said, we do try to make rice grow as quickly as we can. Obviously, one of the goals that we have because of the flooded environment is get it to a flooded environment just as rapidly as we can. Some of the soil factors, just to be a little bit more specific, this is a sharky clay, typical of about 70% of the rice acreage in Mississippi, and now quite a bit of the acreage I would expect in Arkansas with the growth over in the Delta area. But these soils, as you can see, can go from extremely wet to extremely dry on the surface in about 30 minutes. I'm maybe exaggerating a little bit, but in all actuality, they do dry out quite quickly. And then when we do have a lot of rainfall events, and especially in cool weather situations, I don't know if you can see the bleaching of this rice, but that is clomazone. We use that for a pre-emerged grass herbicide, and so oftentimes our rice is stunted, especially if the higher rates are used and we have a lot of wet conditions as well as cool conditions. We really want to go from this stage to seeing a nice established flood. Obviously, from a weed control standpoint, you've got fertilizer, you've got water. Weeds love it, especially in the South where barnyard grass thrives quite well in the rice environment. The other thing that, and one of the reasons that we wanted to investigate this a little bit more closely, this starter application of nitrogen is simply economical. I mean, when ammonium sulfate and those types of products were $100 a ton, we didn't get a lot of questions. It was just a triggered application. If nothing else, the grower felt good about having some nitrogen out there. Then when ammonium sulfate started going up in the neighborhood of $350, $400 a ton, even higher, I think, a year or so ago, boy, we really started getting questions because in Mississippi, we average somewhere around 180 to 200 pounds of total nitrogen per acre for rice. And 20 pounds of nitrogen, really, in the grand scheme of things, a few years ago didn't mean a whole lot, but all of a sudden those $20 to $25 applications meant something. So we were started to get a lot of those questions, and then ultimately, as many of you have included in your slides throughout the time, we are in an environment where we are having to be more conscientious of the footprint that we are leaving from a nitrogen leaching, nitrogen runoff, all of those types of things. Obviously, and many of you, I'm sure, have put the literature out there talking about starter fertilizer applications in corn and soybean, and obviously a lot of that literature shows that biomass and plant height yield response has been positive from those. However, as I started looking through the literature, very little, essentially, even probably 5 years ago, the literature was practically void of any research looking at these early season applications in our delayed flood rice system. So obviously the objectives for the work that we were doing is to investigate starter fertilizer, especially nitrogen, on seedling growth, ultimately grain yield. And then one twist that we put on it in this particular study is looking to see how much of that starter we actually recovered. Could it be counted towards the total nitrogen budget or not? There were some just practical evidence out there that we were seeing some positive responses to starter fertilizer. So this was something that we wanted to quantify. The study was conducted at Stoneville, Mississippi on a Sharkey clay soil. The pH there, because of the long-term rice rotation, the pH is 8.0, around a little over 2% organic matter, and a CEC of about 42. We chose to look at two cultivars, one being a traditional semi-dwarf variety that is grown probably in the largest acreage in the South, and then also because of the hybrid rice coming on the scene, and we're planting hybrid at practically one-third of the seeding rate that we do our varieties, we also wanted to look at that and then also look to see if the heterosis did help it to mine more of the nitrogen from those early applications. The study was fairly simple. We either put starter out or we didn't. 0 or 22 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. We did use labeled ammonium sulfate. I think the average was 10.1% atom, and we applied that at the 1 to 2 leaf growth stage. All of our treatments, except for the untreated checks, received a total of 168 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, and we did balance that. So in other words, if you got a starter of the 22 kilograms, we subtracted that and balanced it for both nitrogen and sulfur at the pre-flood stage, which is about the 5 to 6 leaf growth stage. This is just a graphic of how the study was lined out. I had a master's student doing this, so he had a lot of fun driving these galvanized collars into the soil, and you know, you'd think clay soil is kind of soft, but like I said, it dries out pretty quickly. So he had a large time driving those in. The response variables that I'm going to talk about today are seedling plant height, total dry matter at the flooding stage, and then total nitrogen uptake, and N15 recovery, and then grain yield. I'm actually going to start first talking about grain yield, because from the grower perspective, they don't really care how much nitrogen we accumulate and all that. They just want to know, is it going to pay for itself? And if it was based on these 2 years of data, I would have a very difficult time recommending that particular application. I'm showing the means for all of the treatments. However, the main effect of cultivar was significant in 2007 and 2008, but there was no starter effect in either year. So averaged across treatments, obviously we're seeing the hybrid outperform the inbred variety. That's not uncommon, especially in small plot type work, to the tune of approximately 25%. Plant height in 2007, once again, in this particular study, we saw no response to plant height with a starter, and even the variety and hybrid were essentially the same. We did see a little bit increased plant height with the XL723 in 2008 compared to the variety, but once again, no effect to the starter application. Total dry matter at the pre-flood growth stage, we did see a cultivar effect in 2007, 2008, as well as a starter effect in 2008. So in 2007, you can see there that the total dry matter was larger in the variety, not the hybrid. Obviously, one of the reasons for that was, you know, we're planting the variety at about 90 pounds of seed to the acre versus a hybrid at 35 pounds, and heterosis really doesn't start to exhibit itself until after the flood is established and maximum tillering, or the tillering stage has initiated. So it wasn't really all that surprising to see that particular result. As I said, there was a starter effect in 2008 where averaged across the cultivars there, we did see a significant response to total dry matter. I think that probably could be explained with total nitrogen uptake information. Once again, a starter effect in 2008, cultivar effect in 2007, but we did see greater nitrogen uptake in 2008 due to the starter nitrogen application. The nitrogen 15 recovery, there was an interaction between cultivar and growth stage in 2007, and then also the main effective growth stage in 2008. And what we saw in 2007 was very low recovery at the pre-flood growth stage. At the 5-6 leaf, there was just not less than 1% recovery of that 22 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. Obviously, the increase was exponential. We saw an average of about 9% recovery for both the inbred and the hybrid at the panicle differentiation growth stage, which is about 3 to 4 weeks after flooding. And then where we started seeing the difference between the hybrid and the inbred was at these later growth stages. The hybrid appeared to be able to absorb that nitrogen more efficiently than the variety. In 2008, we saw quite a bit more recovery at the pre-flood growth stage, which we saw that in the total nitrogen uptake. We saw that in the total dry matter. But we're still only talking about a 3% recovery there. So 22 kilograms, 3%, we're not talking about a lot of nitrogen, especially when you're putting out 22 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. We only obtained about half of, in 2008, of the total recovery by the heading growth stage compared to 2007. So in summary, seedling plant height, grain yield were not affected by the starter ammonium sulfate. Total dry matter was affected in 2008, however, it was not in 2007. Total nitrogen uptake was increased by the starter in 2008. Nitrogen recovery was greater in 2008 relative to 2007. However, that maximum recovery was only about 16%. So what are some of the practical implications from this? Well, number one, if we're going to continue a starter application, obviously, in my opinion, we need to back this up closer to flooding, let the roots establish themselves a little bit more, start actively taking up nitrogen. The rate of nitrogen, we only took up a couple of pounds of the starter. The reason that we put 100 pounds of ammonium sulfate out is because the plane charges for 100 pounds. I mean, that's just the way it is with that particular system. But obviously, we were very inefficient with that. So from a future research standpoint and some of my collaborators here that are in the room, we've discussed this. Obviously, on these sharky clay soils, there's some evidence that points towards the fact that they have a strong immobilization potential for ammonium. And then also on these soils, and this is thanks to the guys in Arkansas that have done some work with that, we have an extremely high nitrification rate on these soils. Obviously, with nitrification and the fact that we flush these fields, so water is emerged and then we establish a permanent flood, a lot of this nitrogen could be denitrified on the onset of flood without it ever having the opportunity to be absorbed by the plant. I do have soil collected from this, so we'll be doing the N15 analysis on the soil. I just have not gotten to that point yet, so that ought to really add to the nitrogen dynamics of this particular study. So with that, I do appreciate the Mississippi Rice Promotion Board for funding this, and if I do have time for questions, I'll be glad to answer that. If not, I'll answer it later in the discussion. Thank you.
We have time for a question.
Was there any particular reason to using 1-2 leaf stage at the beginning?
The 1-2 leaf stage application is just a standard application time. The rice has emerged. We know that we have a stand of rice. And so, as I said earlier, we're trying to push the rice to flood. So once we see that we have a stand, we know that we've got 3 to 4 weeks there, depending on weather and all that, to get to flood. So that's just the timing that we know that we've got a stand and we have a potential crop in the field. So that's the reason for that application.
I've never seen the stat case where yields increase substantially in the hybrid, but total biomass of the hybrid is substantially less than the inbred. Never seen that. So the implication is the inbred must have an unusually low harvest index.
Well, let me clarify that. That particular information was collected at flooding. Now, once you get out to maturity, those biomasses probably converge, if not more so, with the hybrid. All right. Thank you so much.